This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
We're back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider, Sports Talk 1050, WTKA online at WTK.com. Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub on the other side, and the MGO Blog Roundtable crew, minus Craig Ross today, could not be with us, but man, it started it all over at MGO Blog. Brian Cook is with us. Brian, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing great. Seth Fisher, getting ready for Tigers opening day. How are you this morning?
I am. I'm taking my daughter out of school. I had to get that past several people that I didn't think would care that much, but her teacher was like, "What are you doing?" And I'm like, "It's opening day. This is a thing." So, yeah here we go.
Hey, it's Detroit tradition, right?
Yeah.
It's a whole holiday here in Southeast Michigan. But anyway, guys, last week was Michigan's annual spring game, spring exhibition, whatever you want to call it. So let's talk takeaways from it. Keeping it in perspective, you can never read too much into a spring game. But Brian, what were your biggest takeaways from last Saturday?
I think the fact that the defensive tackle seemed to hold up against some dudes on the offensive line. Like, we know what Zinter looks like. We know that the Virginia transfer, I forget his name.
Oluwatimi
was a Remington finalist last year. Michigan has a lot of depth on the offensive line. And for the most part, when Michigan had success on the ground, it was bouncing outside, at least for chunks. So I think that's a really good sign about Mozzie Smith and Rayshon Benny. And Mason Graham really jumped out at me. He probably a year away, because true freshman defensive tackles almost never make an impact, but he really brings a Ryan Glasgow vibe. So I think we know what Michigan has on the offensive line. I think we know what Michigan has at running back. And for Michigan to not get blown out on the defensive line, I thought was a really good sign.
Seth?
I mean, the obvious things are Khalil Mullings looks like a running back. I'm still a little worried about the linebacker position, especially because Barrett still kind of doesn't look like he's really going to turn into a weak side linebacker. I think he's what he is, you know, a Viper edge guy. We did get to see kind of how they're going to pass rush this year. They don't have Ojabo and Hutchinson just destroying tackles. And, you know, the Chris Wormley style of Mike Morris is going to work just fine. I think I'm less worried about him, more worried about the other side. They didn't really see any of those guys getting pass rush. Now, against the run, Upshaw's fine, right? Harrell actually made like a really good play in this game. But that's the spot, I think, going into the fall where I'm going to be like, okay, we need to figure out how we're going to do linebacker after the starters. Colson looked fine. Who else? Oh, Rayshon Benny really stood out. Like, I know Mason Graham, you know, he looked like a future Graham Glasgow, but Rayshon Benny reminds me of Raquan Williams, who is that Michigan State defensive nose tackle who just could not run zone against him at all. He's just too long, too strong, and too athletic. And like every time I looked around, Benny was making a play in the backfield. He did get in the backfield on a stretch, which is like a thing that young tackles do and kind of can destroy your defense. But you know, that happens to every freshman. I think he looks like a viable backup nose, and having a rotation there is going to be a big deal this year. I know they get Jeter back later. They're planning on getting Jeter back in a few weeks, but having that rotation solid, Jenkins looks like he's ready to go and replace Hinton one for one. So yeah, I agree with Brian. Having that interior line shored up really makes you kind of feel more positive going forward.
Yeah, I thought Chris, I felt Chris Jenkins in there.
Yeah.
I thought he was a dude who we saw flashes of last year. And it's like, okay, man, it looks like this dude is, and he has the pedigree, right? I mean, his dad was a longtime NFL guy. And so you expect him to be a guy who takes a step. But how about a guy that I wasn't really checking for, who kind of made a name for himself in a spring exhibition, at least, is George Rooks. I was like, okay, I almost had forgotten about George Rooks a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, he's close to a top 100 player who looks like he fits the bill physically. Again, maybe he's a year away from where you're feeling like super confident about him. But Michigan finally seems to have decent numbers of high-rated scholarship players after they had a lull there. And before that, I mean, Michigan's defense was built on Glasgow and Hurst and all these guys who are NFL defensive tackles, and it's really nice to have those guys back. As I mean, we saw it against Georgia, right? Like, I think defensive tackle is probably the most important position on your defense, and you really need one and a half starters at both spots, right? Because you can't just run one guy out there the whole game. So that kind of depth is really important. The other thing that leapt out at me: double passes every game this year.
That was my hot take last week.
Like, and you need to have a flea flicker in every game and a double pass in every game. That's what's happening.
My goal is to get every single skill position player to throw a pass this year.
Hey, why not? Jim's the type of dude that, as much as we are talking tongue in cheek, at least a little bit, I think.
Nope,
not at all.
No, not at all.
Michigan State ran a flea flicker in virtually every game last year, and it worked out pretty well for them. So.
It did. It's I think Borges calls a play action pass on steroids or something like that.
Yeah.
But hey, you talk about replacing the production up front. The other sort of glaring hole is, how do you replace Dax? How do you replace everything that he was on the back end? And while no one player is Dax, they kept over the course of the spring talking about how good Mike Samristal was looking in coverage. And we saw him very early in the game, make a play in coverage. He was pretty sticky all day. How much do you buy in? How much do you believe in the hype that he is going to be, that he's going to make an impact as a coverage guy, as a coverage nickel for Michigan next season?
I lend that some credence. He looked good. And you never really want to start a guy who you just switch from another position, but early returns seem pretty encouraging. I mean, the issue for Michigan is that Dax Hill was a three-down player. Uh-huh. And I don't think Mike Sanders still is going to be a three-down player. And I don't think whoever the running down guy, whether that's Barrett or whoever ends up at that spot, Rod Moore or something, on standard downs, isn't going to be a three-down player either. So that's, you're not going to have a guy who can do both. And that's going to have some limitations for you. And like, they're going to be times when Michigan has that spot exploited. I mean, we remember the slot fades issue. It's probably not going to come back with such a vengeance, because Michigan is much more zone based these days and not just cover one all day. But it is going to be an issue. And the three guys who were headed towards the first round of the NFL draft are tough to replace. It's not really a controversial statement, I don't think, but it's going to be an issue, and I don't think we're really going to know how it's being resolved until four games into the season.
Yeah, so Seth, go with me on this Mikey Samristal thought for a minute, because let me tell you, I don't know, there was a guy that they talked about. I mean, he kept flashing and making plays in virtually every practice, and so he's a guy who the physical part of it, he has the want to. He may not be Dax's size, but he's not scared out there physically. So he's not your typical receiver going to defense in that regard. But the coverage piece of it, the quickness, he has good speed. I mean, it makes sense that he would be decent to good in coverage, but he's been great. How much of that do you attribute to not only that he knows the plays, but he's a technician? Like, this dude, I mean, he knows what you're trying to do to him. Formation wise, he knows how you're trying to set him up. He knows from a route technique what you're trying to do to him. How much can we attribute his success this spring to really being dialed into the specifics of this team and this personnel.
I mean, he was the most technical of the receivers, and that's saying something because Ronnie Bell's on this team. But he was the guy who really studied the art, and I think we would see him all the time just kind of set guys up. He really knew how to break down coverages and what moves to use and how coverages were working against him and how to get that space. And that's why he was kind of like Michigan's, you know, if you need a fourth down slant against Michigan State, Samer Still was the guy that you looked at. I think that he's always been that player. You know, his ranking was based off the fact that he was a guy in Massachusetts. And as soon as we saw him on the field, like, if he was playing in Chicago, he would have been a four-star. So, I mean, he has that athleticism. He has that speed, and we've all seen it. So I think that, you know, parts of Dax Hill's job are not on display right now, and we're not going to expect them out of Samer Still. Dax could also be a linebacker. And he was a major blitzer, and he was part of the game, part of Michigan's game plan, like Brian said, a three-down player. When you go to that 4-3, you still have Michael Barrett, who's a great – so I think that's – you just look at Michigan's defense, and there's going to be a lot more personnel. They're going to have changed their personnel more this year. Last year they had Hutchinson, Ojabo. Those guys are going to generate pass rush no matter what. You can sit in that and have Dax Hill be your switchblade and – that will just work. Now you can do that, but you have to recreate it in the aggregate. And Samer Still is a big piece of that. I totally believe that he can handle the coverage parts of that, but I think he's more Blake Countess than he is Dax Hill. And that's a good player, but not Dax Hill.
Yeah, and Blake Countess, give him credit. He's been able to hang around in the league and was actually more than a special teams player in the earlier portion of it. So that's not a bad comparison at all. I'll take Blake Countess. Let's look at the other side, guys. You know, splash players. I mean, obviously, you're going to be talking a lot about Darius Clemens, right?
I mean, spring.
True.
True. Also, like, how many targets is a freshman wide receiver going to get on this team? Like, you got Bell back. You got Johnson back. You got
Roman Wilson.
Roman Wilson. You got AJ Henning. You got Andrew Anthony. Like, how many targets is Clemens going to get this year? Not that many. So I think he's a promising prospect for the future. That's definitely the truth. But in terms of like who you might see next year, who is a surprise, Seth already mentioned him, but I'm going to go back to Khalil Mullings because he looked natural. He was able to burst outside and that's like an eye-opening bounce out there. And he had a couple nice cuts inside when they used him in the power game. He was powerful. And I think there's 50 to 100 carries for a guy who's not Edwards or Blake Corum because neither of those guys is exactly a power back.
Sure.
And if you're asking me who I'd like to see in that role, I think it's Mullings. And we've seen him at linebacker, and he's just his speed of thought doesn't really seem up to par yet. And if he's in his third year here, and that's still the case at linebacker, I think it's maybe time to think position switch.
Yeah, 230, as great as I think Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards are going to be, and I think they're going to be outstanding. I mean, matchup nightmare for everyone they face this year. Neither of them is 230 pounds. And there's just a place for a 230-pounder, right? I mean, they went out and tried to bring one in this last recruiting cycle and just got one in the mix here, a couple weeks ago, Seth. So you look at the roster. Got to find someone. Khalil Mullings looks like he could be that guy.
Yeah. I mean, your third back is not necessarily the most important position, but it's definitely a position you have to fill. The problem is third linebacker is also a very important position to fill. And I think that if they had a third linebacker, Mullings would easily be Michigan's. He'd be just in the running back room right now. Because we saw what he could be at linebacker. And it's, you know, like Brian said, the third year, you have to know where you're going a little bit better, or it's just not going to happen. But they tried Barrett in that spot. Barrett doesn't look like he's ever going to be an inside linebacker. You know, they were throwing around other guys in there. They have their two starters, but they don't have anyone behind them. So I think it's not a question of whether you want Mullings at running back. It's obvious. He's your third best running back on the team. I think the question is, can you afford what's more important, a third linebacker or a third running back? Because a third linebacker is probably on the field as much or more than that third running back. But you don't really have someone else who can do that, right? Like, they were talking about AJ Henning, but Henning is more of a, you know, if Quorum gets hurt kind of thing, but then you can go to that
guy. I think he's going to get some, you know, not like, you know, a bunch of carries a game, but I think you can see him getting a couple carries regularly.
Well, easily, yeah, because if he's out there as a slot receiver, he's functionally a second back already. So like all you have to do is motion him into the backfield and there you go. So like they can use him as that. I just don't know if you need AJ Henning plus Blake Corum plus Donovan Edwards. Like, you have that skill set already in the backfield. It's more about like, do you have somebody who can, you know, turn, you know, second and six into third and two on the regular when you're trying to chew down a game at the end of the day?
Yeah. Intriguing guy. All right. So you got to talk quarterbacks. We didn't see much Cade in this game, nor did we expect to, frankly. We'll have a conversation about that coming up. But Davis Warren, I mean, is it a foregone conclusion that Alan Bowman is number three? Or, you know, are you, we were talking to Scott Bell earlier this week. He said, hey, man, I think that dude's your third stringer. What do you guys think?
I think I don't want to know the answer to that. if this comes right up, I'm going to be like really disappointed. I don't.
Yeah, Marvin Gaye comes right.
Yeah, I don't want to know, Sam.
Touche. But if it happens that you need a third guy. Bowman has experience, but this dude seems like he has a little something to him.
Yeah, I'm put in the mind of the Indianapolis coach who was asked, like, why are they giving all the practice reps to Peyton Manning? And the guy says, well, if Peyton goes down, we're effed, and we don't practice effed. So
Right, I hear you. Hey, yeah, it's a nice story that we don't want to see carry on in the season, to your point.
Right.
But they say he does that on the regular in practice. If so, I think that would make things really interesting, what they would do if Armageddon hit. But, you know, Cade McNamara definitely taking his leadership to another level, said the offense, you saw basically nothing. You knew they were going to be vanilla, but he said they were more explosive. He expects to be a more potent, when you talk about passing, you know, the quick strike explosiveness, got the impression that he feels like they're going to be better in that regard. But this is still a battle. It was just put on pause because JJ McCarthy had his shoulder his shoulder rehab going on. But everything that I hear, guys, says that he is well on pace to be back and ready to go by the fall. Before that, I mean, he's throwing pain-free, going to step up his throwing regimen this month. They say he's seeing the best experts in the country, even consulting with Tom House, who is like the guy when it comes to throwing in baseball and football. So I'm not ready to say what the quarterback dynamic is going to be next year. I'm curious where you guys are in that regard.
Well, I mean, I think I've said this before, but I expect it to be a rotation at least for the first few games, because Michigan gets a really easy start to the year. We saw JJ McCarthy play meaningful snaps last year as a true freshman.
JJ was a true freshman. Yeah, true freshman.
Yeah. I can't imagine that's not going to continue. And then at some point, someone will be the starter and someone will be the backup. But I think that given the different skill sets that they bring to the table, I think you're going to see both guys play most of the year. And I think that's a smart thing to do in the modern environment. If you're definitively a backup behind someone, there's a lot of chance someone's going to bounce and guys get hurt. So having a situation where both guys feel like they can play and showcase what they're doing, I think is the right way to go. Now, when it comes down to crunch time, it's going to be one of the guys. But this year, it looks like crunch time is the last game. So
you guys don't see a Kelly Bryan, Trevor Lawrence scenario emerging here.
Where some guy transfers four games into the season.
where they make a decision on one guy four games into the season and like that's the guy.
Well, I hope they make the decision five games into the season if that's what they're going to do. But I think at some point there will be a starter. Like, and I do think that Michigan is going to have the number two guy play, get a drive or two, just because that seems like the way to go.
Keep in mind, I said this tons last year, and it's even more true this year because now JJ is going to be more ready. You're a football team. You're not, these are not like guaranteed spots. We're not here to serve the needs of the quarterback. The quarterback is here to serve the needs of the team. Two guys who have very different skill sets and are very different types of quarterbacks are very hard to prepare for. If you're a receiver, you still prepare for it the same way. I mean, when JJ's out there, you know, like, you know, hey, run around a little bit longer because things might happen. But it's there are two different guys that you have to prepare for entirely differently. It makes life hell on defense to prepare that way. So if Michigan can do that, it's another weapon they have. I agree with Brian that there's probably going to be, quote, a starter. I hope Cade's not listening. I thought that the plays they ran in the spring game, that I could tease out more JJ-style stuff in the offense than they had last year. There were a lot of fly routes. There were a lot of, I mean, you still had the crossing routes to Ronnie Bell, and that's going to be Michigan's go-to play this year, right? Even though Ronnie wasn't out there, you saw that drag, clear out the guys, create that space for the drag route, and just let him win that route. That's going to be in the offense because Ronnie Bell's the man. He may be the best in the country at that route. But like when you look at what they were doing in the offense, there was like a fake read all the time. They had they had that rollout where like there's an opportunity to hand off or to check the line and see what you want to do. Those are plays that you design when you have a quarterback that you want to A, run, or B, run around the backfield for a while and let your guys get open. That's JJ McCarthy offense. That's creating, you know, opportunities for a guy like with his talent to just destroy things. And we saw, I mean, LSU used that same kind of stuff all the time to win a national championship. So that's how you do that. It's going to be interesting. I don't think it's, you know, a lock at all. I think that if it was going to be JJ from the start, he probably needed to be healthy in spring. So he's, quote, on track, but I think that, like Brian said, it's going to probably be both guys. They have a long ramp up during the season for one of these guys to show more. But that long ramp up also favors JJ McCarthy. You don't really have to be ready to play until, you know, Maryland.
Yeah, it's crazy to think, not that you want him to have some shoulder soreness to put you in this spot, but it's as far as keeping both quarterbacks engaged and on the roster. I mean, this wasn't a bad sort of, it wasn't, right? It wasn't.
Oh, are you suggesting Harbaugh kind of sat down with JJ like, hey man, how's your shoulder? Oh, no, really. How's your shoulder?
No, I mean, like, nobody was going to be dumb enough to like make any decisions in spring, right? Like,
these are college play. These are college guys.
I know.
I never discount that. But you know, keep in mind, Cade McNamara has the same eligibility as JJ, even though he's 2 years older and, you know, seems like 40 years older. He, you know, because he got the COVID year, he's a sophomore right now, and so is JJ. So he's got to be looking at that too, especially when JJ is telling people, look, I'm sticking around at Michigan as long as my eligibility lasts, which I don't necessarily believe, but I mean.
Here's the brass tacks for me. Even if you think JJ McCarthy won't rise up and win the job, and I do, he's definitely going to get more snaps. Like there's just no way he doesn't, at least even in a number two role, get more snaps this year. He has experience under his belt. I think you're going to see him take a step in his play on the field. It's going to be hard to keep that at bay. You wouldn't want to your point. I mean, you see what kind of dynamism he can bring to the field. They're going to want more of that. The question is how much more.
I mean, they already turned to him against Georgia, right? So, I mean, we already saw, like, we need to come back. We need to change things. we threw him in. So
yeah, so it makes things interesting because I think it raises Cade's play too. So either way, the quarterback play overall, I think it's going to be better this year. Good problem to have. We need to get to a break though, because we got some Frozen Four action to talk about. This Michigan hockey team looking to bring home, this would be number 10, Brian? 10th national championship?
Yes. Yep.
Yes.
Yep. Looking to bring home number 10. So we're going to get a breakdown, a preview from the crew. So stay tuned for that here on the Michigan Insider, MGo Blog Roundtable, Sports Talk 1050, WTKA, The Ticket.
Clear on the radio, 2.5 minute radio break.
All righty. Thank you, all you people. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I'm seeing all of these. I mean, even thank you to Eric Tobin. See, Eric, because I'm feeling good on this day, I'm not going to even hold your feet to the fire today, man. Love my man Eric and Sheldon, and thank you to Linda. I'm looking at all these messages on the chat. Scott, appreciate you. Cool people. But
happy birthday, Sam.
Sam, your birthday should not give Eric a pass from blowing it at John Moran. I'm sorry. Your birthday does not give Eric a pass.
Should be the opposite. You should get to, I mean, not, this is your birthday. He can't say anything back, right?
Right. Well, he really can't say anything back. Anyway, women, they defend their national championship. That's next week, right? That's next week.
Yeah, it's next week. Yeah. The 14th and 16th.
Yeah, Eric, you know we have to mention it, man. You know we have to mention it. All right. So, but fellas, I guess we should talk about it a little bit here in the break because we want to get a chance to get to it on the while we're on the air. But way too early top 25 in basketball for Michigan. Had Michigan at number 10. And I was like, do they know something that I don't about who's coming back? But let's assume for the sake of argument that they return intact. This is a contender, right? Are you ready to go that far?
For what? For the Big Ten, yes. For the Final Four, I don't know. Because I love Frankie, but my dude shot like 44% on free throws this year. You don't really know what you're getting out of Bufkin. You hope that you get big leaps forward from Houston and Diabate, still kind of up in the air. You are going to be starting at least two non-shooters, and then Hunter doesn't count, really. He might count next year as like an actual shooter, but I mean, I think they'll be good, but I think it's tough to win buckets when you don't have shooting, and Michigan looks like that they are going to be struggling. And also, like, who's your Charles Matthews, right? Like, mm-hmm. The problem with the last year where they just didn't have anyone to defend wings doesn't really seem like it's resolving. Jet's 6'8". Maybe Michigan gets lucky with him, but from what everything I've seen, it seems like he's not going to be a guy who's going to lock down your 6'5".
Back in about 10 seconds, guys, on the radio.
Johnny Davis kind of guy. So I think they'll be good.
It'll be interesting.
Coming back in 5, 4, 3.
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. Real quick, we were having a little bit of a basketball discussion. Then we'll go below our roundtable, guys. Brandon Johns enters the portal. There's some talk that this, you know, the rest of the front court could, not saying will, but could return intact. Outlook, if they do, and I'm assuming with that we see guys make improvements. We saw Terrence Williams, for instance, make an improvement from year one to year two. What if Caleb Houston makes that kind of improvement shooting? What if we see Musa Diabate take a next step? What if we see Hunter's game be refined even more? What does this team, what's the ceiling for this team if those guys return, starting with you, Brian?
Well, I mean, you still need a two, right? And you still need someone to defend wings. So I think they need to hit the portal for someone. People are talking about Terrence Shannon from Texas Tech, which would be amazing. He's not a great outside shooter. He's like a 36, 38% guy with low volume, but he is a key component of a great defense. So if that happens, you plug him in at the two, you get Jet Howard in, you get some improvement, then we're talking. But I kind of feel like they're just one piece short. And that's someone to defend the Johnny Davises of the world, the Keegan Murrays. I mean, Musa did a good job on Keegan Murray, but like those 6'5", 6'6" guys that gave Michigan all kinds of problems last year, they need someone to staunch that bleeding and shoot it.
Yeah, and you're Seth? Not. I mean, the way this works, like if Michigan blows up to a number one, is Caleb Houston developed? I can't even imagine getting both Musa and Dickinson back. So like I'm just imagining you get one of those guys and put Houston at the four. If you can develop him there and he just takes a big step forward, I mean he came a long way defensively. If he takes a step forward and getting his shot off and all of a sudden he can be your threat outside, that creates some opportunity. If Jet Howard comes in and he's like an instant lottery pick or something, I don't really see that happening either, but like maybe that could add a wing to a mix that really needed one. Like Brian said, get a guy in the portal to be your second two. Kobe Bufkin blows up into a huge offensive presence and a creator. And then that can allow Frankie Collins to be the, you know, Xavier Simpson point guard for you. I mean, that's the way it happens. There's so many ifs in there, right? There's so many guys who need to take such a big step forward or even come back. Now, if Musa comes back, his freshman to sophomore leap is going to be massive. And that's a guy, I think, you know, his hands were a little bad this year, and I don't know if that's necessarily fixable. But everything else about his game was very freshman this year, and next year could be a very lottery pick. And that kind of changes the whole thing.
Yeah, Michigan has a lot of candidates for guys to bust out in year two. Like, we saw Davis and Keegan Murray blow up this year, and Michigan has three guys in Bufkin, Houston, and Diabate who could make similar leaps. So you can't bank on that, but Michigan has a lot of possibility to get a real breakout player. Yeah. Frankie, too.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The thing is, too, the Big Ten is kind of, I mean, they hit their high a few years ago, and like some of the guys who were part of that are all leaving, right? Like Keegan Murray's going to be gone. Johnny Davis, that's a no-brainer. He's going to go to the NBA. EJ Liddell is going to be gone. I think they're going to lose Malachi Branham too. So
yeah,
you look around the league and the path gets a lot easier. I mean, Purdue, they're still going to have Purdue's still going to be Purdue, but they're going to be Purdue without Jaden Ivey and without that ceiling. So like you look around the league and some of the big pieces that made the contenders so difficult to get around are not going to be around anymore, which really plays into Michigan's hands. Like they have more than enough, I think, to be top one or two in the Big Ten next year. And then, you know, in the playoffs, Michigan has shown that they can outplay themselves in the playoffs and they can develop over the course of the season, but they probably are not going to be one of the top 10 teams in the country.
All right, let's talk some hockey, guys. Frozen Four, Michigan-Denver, 17 national championships between them. Their coach said, hey, this could be a 9-8 game.
That's because he thinks his goalie is going to give up 9 goals.
Well, he said 9-8
game. If it's a 9-8 game, that's because Michigan got ahead 9-3.
Oh, my God. And then just if it's a 9-8 game, I'm not coming next week because I'll be dead.
Well, Mike Pastajoff, he had a comeback. He said, hey, good luck scoring 9 goals against us. We play some pretty tough teams, and we matched up pretty well against all of them. You're scoring 9 goals on us, right? So, how do you guys see this game playing out tonight? Two-story programs, a lot of talent on the ice. How do you see this one playing out, Brian?
Well, they played Quinnipiac, and Quinnipiac averages 1.1 goals against, and that game was wide open. That game was inexplicably wide open. It was not what Quinnipiac wanted to play. They got a lot of good chances, and Portillo shut the door on them, and that was how they won. But if the Quinnipiac game is wide open, I don't know what this is going to be. This is going to be some fire wagon hockey because these are two teams that are probably the most skilled in the country with the possible exception of Minnesota, who's on the other side of the bracket. The Frozen Four this year is the four highest scoring teams in the country. And three Blue Bloods and Minnesota State, who's been on that level for the past 5 years. There's no Providence here. There's no Union here. These are great hockey teams. It's going to be great to watch. As a neutral, as a Michigan fan, I'm going to be terrified because these guys can fill it up. But, you know, if you look at their goalie, he's got like a 909, which is kind of below average. So I think the goalies are going to be the difference, and Portillo is going to be making one or two saves that the opposition goalie does not.
Yeah.
Bruce Mahdi offered that. He said the goalies are definitely going to be the difference. He said not 9-8. It's not going to be a 9-8 game, which I'm thankful for, because that means Brian will still be alive. Seth, well, how do you see this one?
They're a Red Berenson team. Their defenders know how to get the puck up ice really well, and that's the really biggest concern, is they are great on the breakout and they're really good on the forecheck. They have a lot of really tiny dudes who just go all out. A red team. I don't know how better to say it. One of the stats that I pulled was Brett Edwards, who's Ethan Edwards' brother, and Ethan Edwards' size too. He is on the upper half of their defensive size. So he is the third largest defender that they have on that team. They are a small, fast, skilled, offensive team. And when Brian says it's going to be, bonkers out there, it's going to be red on red. It's going to be, the kind of hockey Michigan fans always dreamed of watching and never really wanted to see coming at us. But I agree with Bruce. I think that, Magnus Krohn is their goalie, and he's given up a couple softies. The reason why his goal against average is so low is because they don't give up the puck, right? They take more shots than any team in the country except Penn State. And Penn State's whole thing is just put the puck on net. So out of teams that are actually trying to get good scoring opportunities, Denver is the number one in the country, and they control the puck. And because of that, and that's how they play defense, is just to keep the puck out of your hands. I don't know if they're going to be able to do that against Michigan. So this is going to be up ice. There we go. If we have a turnover in the offensive zone, that could create a scoring chance really quickly. So, the big thing here is Michigan's just got to stay locked in. Like the stuff that happened against Quinnipiac at the end, where just, someone loses a skate or somebody turns it over really quick, like that cannot happen. They're going to have to play their defensive game, because offensively we can go toe-to-toe with these guys.
So you look at the other side. Is there a civil war going on in Minnesota right now? Minnesota versus Minnesota State in a Frozen Four must be fun in the land of a thousand lakes right now.
Yeah, especially since the WCHA used to be such a important part of their hockey identity. That got taken away, and a lot of the enthusiasm around Minnesota hockey really kind of dropped out. And to get a old WCHA matchup in the Frozen Four, we saw Duke and UNC go at it in the Final Four. This is similar. A little bit different because Minnesota State is an upstart and not like Minnesota's historic rival. Michigan played both those teams, beat both those teams, won the season series against Minnesota, and played very well in the Big Ten championship game. So I think if Michigan can get past Denver, they'll feel fairly confident going into the final. But, single elimination hockey, what are you going to do?
Yeah, that's the problem with previewing this at all. We can tell you what these games will look like and who these teams are. Minnesota State, they lost to Michigan and, lost four more times the whole rest of the season. They are a very, very solid team. It's impossible to predict, right? Hockey games are just so random in the first place. The best team in the country will beat the worst team in the country 8 times out of 10. That's how random this game is. So, we could tell you how it's going to be. I think it's really cool that they have four great teams in the Frozen Four, because so many times, because of the randomness of hockey, you just end up with, crummy teams in there, and then, who cares? And then, they always have it in the East. It's just annoying as hell, but, it's really cool to see teams of this caliber. Whoever wins this national championship is going to be the best team in hockey.
Yeah, I'm going to have to earn it. So how about this? Just break it down on a very basic level. Four teams. Who's the best goaltender in the bunch?
Statistically, it's probably Minnesota State's. In terms of what kind of shots you're facing, I think Portillo has a pretty good case. But Minnesota State's Dryden McKay is got a 934, which is fourth in the country. And then honestly, Justin Close, who came in for Minnesota after LaFontaine left midseason, is also up there. So you have these these three guys who are all pretty close statistically. And then you have Denver's guy who's several steps back. So it's you could name any of the three guys who aren't Denver's goalie, and you could make a case for them.
And any goalie in hockey can turn to Superman for a weekend. Like that's part of the randomness of hockey. But Dryden McKay I wouldn't just say it's just shot quality. He is a legit star at goalie.
Okay. All right. We shall see. 5 o'clock. Someone just Scott Patton on our Facebook page just said, why the 5 p.m. start?
Well, 5 p.m. start is because there's a game after. And Michigan is the number one overall seed, so they get to go first. So they have a little bit more rest for a hypothetical final on Saturday. That's why.
Okay. Yeah. Well, basketball, they play, you know, when they get to the Final Four, they get both games in prime time, so to speak. But anyway, you know, just beggars lucky. Can't be choosers, right?
Yeah. Lucky it's on TV.
We got Alejandro. Alejandro is in Boston coming to Frozen Four for us. So we will have full recaps and post game from Boston for the folks here tomorrow. So looking forward to that. And, you know, just as far as the other sports, because gymnastics isn't until next week. An interesting thing that I wanted to throw at you guys, total curveball, and I'm apologize for coming out of left field with this, but Ira and I got into this yesterday. So Nas is going pro, right? We expected that. Did not expect to see two big-time players in league hit the portal. Mm-hmm. So you got Angel Reese and Ashley Owusu at Maryland. So Angel Reese, number two player in the country coming out, 18 points a game from her forward position. Would give you that punch in the post that you're losing with Nas, right? But Ashley Owusu is that point guard, not necessarily the fleet of foot. She's more Anthony Mason, more Paul Pressey in her point guard style. But man, it would seem to be a really interesting option. And Michigan does have a scholarship available there, Seth. It really seems like you could patch a big hole really, really quick in the transfer portal and go to becoming maybe a favorite. If you pick up one of those players, I mean, you aren't just talking Sweet 16 or maybe getting back to the Elite Eight. You're talking about cutting down the nets.
Can you get them in? And that's the thing. Like, if they're coming out of the league, that's a better chance than otherwise. Because, you know, we saw they had a transfer from Nebraska and that worked. And having another team in the AAU helps, right? So, I mean, that's got to be the question. I imagine Michigan would be a top destination for them.
You imagine, because Michigan beat them twice. Angel Reese is a sophomore, so she hasn't she hasn't reached the credit threshold yet that, you know, crosses it out. It just becomes Kent. And she's still taken in the, Ira made this point yesterday, she's still at the point where it's core classes. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times the core, you have easier time with your core classes.
If you, getting a Big Ten team to getting Big Ten credits to transfer is way easy. I went through the credit transfer process at Michigan and it's hell. It's hell no matter what. But I don't know how well Maryland does directly. I don't want to get into the whole process, but they kind of look for exactly the same class and they go class to class and try to match. And if they can match, you get full credit for that. So, you know, hopefully it can be like that. Michigan seems like they're in that spot now where, like, you want to play for Kim, right? See, that looks a lot of fun. She just had another coach become a head coach at Harvard, right? Yeah, mm-hmm. So, I mean, she's got, I think, four or five assistants now are head coach. So four of her assistants are now head coaches, which, you know, in women's basketball, it's not like you're looking towards the pros, right? Like, if you're a sophomore transferring, you get to play till you're a senior. So that's a big transfer from Michigan's standpoint, too. Damn. Where you fill a spot for a while. And then when you look at where the jobs are afterwards, half of the good jobs are in coaching. So if you can get into a good staff, if you get into one of those, you know, you become one of Kim Barnes-Rico's people, that opens doors for you in the game, because the game professionally doesn't necessarily take you as far as, you know, being a professional men's athlete would be, would take you. So
yeah, Angel Reese isn't Nas, but she's not far off. And if if you can add her to Layla Filia in year two, Leah Brown is a senior, and you have your, she was a freshman last year, but in Ari Wiggins coming in and maybe giving you some speed and quickness at that point guard spot, I mean, you might be falling up the stairs here.
And Layla's going to break out next year too. So, I mean, it's going to be fun either way, but I think you're right. I think that kind of puts them into that, you know, that top tier that they weren't necessarily in this year, right? Like you saw when they played Louisville, they're not quite that level of talent.
In the backcourt, only in the backcourt. Yeah. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see if they can, with some of the youngsters stepping up, if they can bridge that gap. And you do have one scholarship to use in the portal, which is, you know, it's tough for Juwan and company as they look at the portal, because I didn't touch on this point. What the scholarship availability is. So you can only do so much.
Harder roster construction wise being the men's coach than the women's coach. They have more scholarships too, don't they? Don't women have 15 scholarships? 15. Yeah. So
well, so with Johns in the portal and Devontae Jones entering the draft, they do have a spot now. Michigan.
Yeah.
The men's.
Yeah. 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 But you could have more. And
yeah, I know, but they can definitely go look for one guy.
So what would you prioritize?
For the men?
For the men. Just a shooter?
Yeah, just, I mean, like a guy who can sit on the perimeter and get Frankie kickouts and play defense.
You guys know who's in the portal is that guard from St. Peter's who was canning all the threes against Kentucky.
E-Dirt!
With the mustache. I want that to happen so bad.
I mean,
most spots in the portal.
A wing defender or a shooter, like there are mid-major shooters, proven college shooters are a dime a dozen, so they can definitely find someone for the two role, but like the Charles Matthews kind of guy that I think Michigan could really benefit from will be in higher demand. I mean, honestly, Eater, like his name's not Eater, that's just what I call him, it's Eder. but this is a guy who shot 51, 41, 89 last year. So he's not a bad fit. I don't know if he can play defense at a high major level, but
against Kentucky.
All right, guys, we're up against it. So I'm putting you on the spot. When we talk next week, are we talking about a national championship here in Ann Arbor?
Sure. What the hell? I mean, it's single elimination playoff hockey.
Much more optimistic than Brian was 11 years ago. So
it is, like isn't it? Yeah, there was just no chance they were going to advance that year. All right, Seth, real quick, are we talking national championship?
Flipping a coin. Yes, Michigan advances, and Michigan national champions. There we go.
There we go. All right, guys, thanks as always. Another great MGO Blog Roundtable to the rest of you. We'll see you tomorrow here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.